Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media
and the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors, even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Good evening. Welcome to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio. Excuse me, I'm your host, Abraham Hamilton III, and I am joined by the full J-Squared contingent. Mr. Jeff Reed is on my left. Mr. Jason Tross is on my right. Marty Sparks is lighting up the dark from the screening room. And we are ready with today's program. So much is happening. I don't want to run out of time, so let me get right to it. I have a couple of announcements I need to make. This week, Thursday, September 19th, in the year of our Lord, 2019. I, along with Rob Chambers, who is the Director of Government Affairs for the American Family Association, Walker Wildman, and Wesley Wildman, who are both vice presidents at AFA, we will all descend, or I guess it would be ascend based on where I am, but we'll descend, I'll keep it that way, on Fredericksburg, Virginia. This will be the Living the Gospel During Difficult Times Town Hall event that will take place at the Fredericksburg Hospitality House Hotel and Conference Center. The address is 2801 Plank Road, Fredericksburg, Virginia, zip code 22401. The event will begin at 6:30 p.m. and it's scheduled to end at 8:30 p.m. If you are in the area, I'd love to meet you there and see you there. I haven't checked the last amounts of registrations. I last heard, but that was a little while back, there were a few slots available. So if you want to attend this Living the Gospel During Difficult Times Town Hall event, you have to register. You can't just show up. You have to register. There's no charge for the event, but you have to register. You go to afaaction.net/Fredericksburg, afaaction.net/Fredericksburg. It will be Thursday this week, so I look forward to seeing you there. I've already gotten some messages. There are some people who listen to this program who I'm looking forward to meeting in person. That will be a great time. In addition to this week, I want to let you know now, if you are in the Cincinnati, Ohio area, I'm hitting a lot of firsts. I've never ministered in the Fredericksburg area, and I never ministered in Ohio. So this will be my first time. Cincinnati, Ohio, November 15th and 16th. The Truth for a New Generation Apologetics Conference will take place at the Landmark Church, which is located at 1600 Glendale Milford Road in Cincinnati, Ohio. They're an amazing list of speakers. You'll have Josh McDowell. You've heard him on the program, well-known apologist. Josh McDowell. We'll have Ryan Bomberger from the Radiance Foundation, a powerful testimony. I mean, this brother shares his experience as having been conceived in rape, and his birth mother had the audacious humanity to put him up for adoption. He was adopted by a wonderful family. I mean, his testimony is fantastic. You wouldn't want to miss him. Erwin Lutzer from Moody Church Radio, a powerful man of God who has an extended multi-decades, I want to say almost half a century of faithful ministry. He will be there, and I will be there as well. So this will take place November 15th and 16th. In Cincinnati, Ohio, you have to register at truthforanewgeneration.com. All as if it's one word, truthforanewgeneration.com. I've posted some information about it on all of my social media accounts, and you definitely don't want to miss that. I certainly am looking forward to that. November 15th and 16th in Cincinnati, Ohio. Is that enough announcements? I think that's enough for now. I'll try to keep you guys abreast when I'm coming around the country. I got a question. When are you going to make your way back to Houston, Abe? That's a good question. That might be on the schedule for 2020. So stay tuned, and I'm looking forward to all of that information. Well, let us now turn to the Word of God. As most of you are making your way from your part-time jobs to your full-time jobs, I encourage you to do that with full intentionality, full passion, full vigor, and full commitment. What happens at your house is way more important than what happens at the White House. If we want to see the nation turn, let's begin by first and foremost submitting ourselves to being transformed by the power and presence of God and by his word. And secondarily, begin with being agents of that transformation in our immediate vicinity. The outworking of the Great Commission is first in Jerusalem. Let us hold down our families. Brothers, serve your families well. Wives, sisters, serve your families well. Let's hold down the home. And as we advocate the execution of the Great Commission in Jerusalem, then when it's time to move out into Judea, Samaria, and the uttermost parts of the world, we'll have an expanded battalion. We look to our left, look to our right, and we'll find the very people that we were serving in an effort to evangelize and disciple them, they will be joining us in our evangelistic and discipleship activities. And let me say this as well. When you are engaging in a discipleship relationship, it's not a one-way street. One thing that I think is often forgotten or overlooked or not mentioned is that when you are engaged in evangelizing and more specifically in discipling others, what often happens, just like in our relationships with our children, oftentimes the people we are discipling will begin to see areas where we need the sanctification of the Lord. And that is not a bad thing. That's a great thing. First, because it shows that the transformation is taking place, causing discernment to increase. And secondarily, that's one of the benefits. That's why the Lord calls his church to be a body. There are no big eyes or little U's in the body. And in fact, we're going to talk a little bit about that. So let's start in Acts chapter 16, verses 1 through 10. You can tell I'm talking fast because I'm excited already. I want to read this, Acts 16, verses 1 through 10. I'll jump into it briefly. Here we go. Verse 1. Paul came also to Derbe and to Lystra. A disciple there named Timothy, the son of a Jewish woman who was a believer, but his father was a Greek. He was well spoken of by the brothers at Lystra and Iconium. Paul wanted Timothy to accompany him, and he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in those places. For they all knew that his father was a Greek. As they went on their way through the cities, they delivered to them for observance the decisions that had been reached by the apostles and elders who were in Jerusalem. So the churches were strengthened in the faith, and they increased in numbers daily. Let me pause and say this, because this portion of Acts gives some people some consternation, because it contrasts the fact that Paul refused to allow Titus to be circumcised. But here you see Timothy, whose mother and grandmother were Jews and had been converted to Christians, followers of the way, but Timothy's father was a Greek. And so Paul allows Timothy to be circumcised. What's the difference here? Several differences. One, in the entire scenario with Titus, the pressure for circumcision came from Gentiles. The pressure was to appease the concerns. The pressure came from Jews who most importantly to highlight were most likely not Christians. Secondarily, they were presenting it as a test of proof. Prove your salvation by having Titus circumcised. Paul said, no way. No way. Remember what he told the Galatians, have we begun in the spirit? Will we return now to the flesh? But now when we see Timothy in Acts 15, what's the difference there? Timothy was raised in a Jewish faith. Timothy was raised by Jewish parents. And you have the stumbling block for the gospel at that time were Jews who all knew Timothy, who had been raised in the Jewish culture, raised within the Jewish ideology. The circumcision was not foreign to his upbringing. And you also will note that this takes place after Acts 15, after the Jerusalem Council. So Paul sees this in keeping with the decisions that were made at the Jerusalem Council. What's happening with Timothy is not foreign to his upbringing, whereas Titus, he was entirely Grecian, entirely Gentile. So there's no inconsistency there, no lack of consistency on the part of Apostle Paul. He's consistent all the way through. You don't impose a foreign cultural standard in order to have somebody to prove their faithfulness to God in the circumstance with Titus. Whereas with Timothy, this was consistent with his upbringing. His upbringing should have afforded him circumcision on the eighth day. So it was nothing foreign there. And in fact, with Timothy, Paul is even the one who executes the circumcision. So I just share that as an aside, because that's not what I want to focus on right now. But verse 6, let me pick up and keep going. And they went through the region of Phrygia. This is Paul and his ministerial team. They went through the region of Phrygia and Galatia, having been forbidden having been forbidden by the Holy Spirit to speak the word in Asia. And when they had come up to Mysia, they attempted to go into Bithynia. But the Spirit of Jesus did not allow them. So passing by Mysia, they went down to Troas. And a vision appeared to Paul in the night. And a man of Macedonia was standing there, urging him, saying, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." And when Paul had seen the vision, immediately we sought to go on into Macedonia, concluding that God had called us to preach the gospel to them. What's happening here? So you have Apostle Paul and his ministerial team. You have Timothy. You have more than likely Luke at this time. They're going about. They're preaching the gospel. They're evangelizing. They come through. They go through the region of Phrygia and Galatia. And this is in the Asian province, modern day Turkey area, and Bithynia. And then lo and behold, the Holy Spirit says, okay, no preaching here. Now, wait a minute. This is me, Paul. I'm your boy. I thought it was your folk. You called me to preach the gospel to the Gentiles. I'm going about to preach the gospel to the Gentiles. And then all of a sudden, the Spirit of God prohibits me. Okay, go back to base. Let's see. Let's see what's going on. Again, they're considering entering into Bithynia, but the Spirit of Jesus does not allow them. So they pass by Mysia and go down to Troas. And then Paul gets a vision. Now, this is the thing that is amazing that I want to note for you. This is the Apostle Paul, formerly Saul, Pharisee, rabbi, trained under Gamaliel, circumcised on the eighth day, the whole nine yards, saw the resurrected Christ in a vision, knocked him off of his horse. He's the only one that sees the vision. Other people around him hearing the voice. You know, he's the one that God calls to lead in this ministry, this missionary journey. But when he has this vision, he doesn't immediately take off heading into Macedonia on his own. He sees the vision of the man of Macedonia saying, come over here to help us. But verse 10 says this, and when Paul had seen the vision, immediately we sought to go on into Macedonia. What is the point I'm making here? Even though Paul was the one that the Lord revealed the call to go into Macedonia through a vision, Paul didn't make the decision to head into Macedonia alone. Paul saw the vision, we entered Macedonia. The point I'm conveying to you is the fact that our Lord himself refers to his church as a body is not happenstance. It's not merely a superfluous language. In a body, every joint supplies. Though Paul was no doubt the leader of this ministerial team, it took his ability to rely on strong brethren to enable him to rightly discern what God was calling him to accomplish, what God was calling him to do. We have to get out of this idea, and it's hard within this contemporary context to where celebrity is all the rage. We have to resist the temptation to capitulate to the culture and allow the desire for celebrity to infiltrate the Lord's church. And to realize, even if God has called you to be the leader of something, that doesn't mean that you are a lone ranger. It doesn't make you a dictator. The Lord didn't call you to be a Fidel Castro of the Great Commission. We have to make sure that we avail ourselves of the wondrous benefits of being in a body. Being in the body enabled the Apostle Paul to rightly discern what's going on here. We're obeying the call of the Lord to preach the gospel to the Gentiles, but now the Spirit of Jesus? The Spirit of Jesus is going to prohibit us from preaching? And Paul leaned on the strength of his ministerial team to rightly discern what God was calling him to do. And isn't it amazing? If you hop over to 1 Peter chapter 1, you see the Apostle Peter addressing his epistle to whom? To Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia. You know where those regions are? The exact same places where the Spirit of God prohibited Paul from entering. You see, from our micro level, we can't see everything that God is doing simultaneously, but he sees it all. And the Spirit of Jesus, as Acts lays out for us, prohibited Paul from entering that region because he was saying to Paul, look, we got this covered. This area, we got this covered. Peter and his ministerial team are the ones that are going to labor in this region, are going to minister in this region. But you make sure you walk lock in step with what I am requiring of you. I can see the Apostle Paul worshiping the Lord for being able to have godly brethren with whom to confer that were able to help him to rightly discern, well, we're not supposed to go into Bithynia and to Asia right now. Let us head into Macedonia and respond to the Macedonian call.
forced to be a murder accomplice. I am Matt Staver with Freedom's Call. A Vermont hospital tragically violated a nurse's conscience last year. The story was announced recently by the Department of Health and Human Services. Apparently, the University of Vermont Medical Center forced a nurse to participate in an abortion, even though the nurse specifically documented religious and moral objections. The hospital didn't care. Totally disregarding the nurse's legal rights of conscience, they knowingly assigned the nurse to the procedure. The nurse tried to object, but the protest fell on deaf ears. Fearing employment termination, the nurse obeyed the insistent command. Now the Office of Human Rights is involved, and the hospital has been given an ultimatum. Change its discriminatory policies within 30 days or no longer receive federal funds. Thankfully, the Trump administration is serious about protecting rights of conscience. Stay informed by visiting Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org.
Have you been looking for a way to serve others? Are you able to serve in a ministry without being paid? You and Friendships might be the perfect match. Friendships is currently taking applications for volunteers providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished, both here at home and around the world. Get more information at friendships.org or by calling 337-433-5022.
Hey, Target. You thought we were done?
Did you think we would give up?
Well, of course not. We still stand strong with our belief that men do not belong in the women's restrooms or changing areas. It's absurd. We should not have to walk in your restrooms with the fear of someone of the opposite sex walking in on us.
Together, we will stop this open-door policy.
Help us by signing the pledge to boycott Target at afa.net.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Second Amendment protects the right of the American people to keep and bear arms. That means the right to own guns and carry them around, because a well-regulated militia is necessary for the security of a free state. So what is a militia? At the time of the founding, every able-bodied man in every state was automatically considered a member of the state's militia. Their right to keep and bear arms was protected so that, if necessary, they could quickly form a military force if called on by the magistrates. Because they were all armed, they each brought their own weapons to the parade grounds. And, by well-regulated, the founders meant that these were not self-appointed militias like we have today, but militias trained under the leadership of the civil authorities in their states. The founders knew what they were doing. These were the Minutemen who gave us our freedom.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
Some of the world's largest oil processing facilities in Saudi Arabia still smoldering. President Trump threatening military action in retaliation, tweeting, "We are locked and loaded, depending on verification." But a senior administration official tells ABC News that the highly coordinated attack was launched from Iranian soil. Nearly a dozen cruise missiles and at least 20 drones packed with explosives pounding multiple targets at the facilities. The massive blaze lighting up the skies, the smoke and fire visible from space.
If the Iranians directly attack the Saudis, it's a major escalation and the first time we have seen a direct attack by the Iranians on Saudi territory.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo pointing the finger at Iran as well in a tweet calling on all nations to publicly and unequivocally condemn Iran's attacks, which Iran flatly denies. The Iranian foreign minister mocking Pompeo, saying the U.S., having failed at max pressure, now turning to max deceit.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner here on American Family Radio. I can tell you that Iranian foreign minister is lying. Well, I'll get into this and explain what I'm talking about here. So by now, many of you have heard over the weekend that the Saudi Aramco is the name of the oil field, the world's largest oil processing facility and oil field was hit by what appears at this point to be an attack launched by Iran. If you're not aware, there is a civil war going on right now in Yemen. between the Yemeni government that is backed by Saudi Arabia and its Sunni regime, and the Houthi rebels are supported by Iran. All right. The attack that occurred, and this happened on Saturday, that one of the features of it that is causing many of the international community and in the U.S. administration, frankly, to conclude that this wasn't done by the Houthi rebels, because they, according to the experts, the so-called expert, I'll say it that way, experts, say the Houthis are incapable of carrying out an attack with such precision. The attack was perpetrated, according to the reports, by 20 unmanned drones in with precise targeting of 17 different points of impact at the Saudi Aramco facility. So they're saying that type of precision is not the work of an Islamist, Houthi rebel outfit. This is the product of a far more sophisticated outfit. And of course, with the things that are going on in the Middle East, you have to know that the Middle East is being kept under pretty tremendous and intense observance. You have Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who's come out and said it directly. I'll read exactly what he said. He said, quote, Tehran is behind nearly 100 attacks on Saudi Arabia, while Rouhani and Zarif pretend to engage in diplomacy. Amid all the calls for de-escalation, Iran has now launched an unprecedented attack on the world's energy supply. There is no evidence the attacks came from Yemen. He goes on, quote, we call on all nations to publicly and unequivocally condemn Iran's attacks. The United States will work with our partners and allies to ensure that energy markets remain well supplied and Iran is held accountable for its aggression. So in no uncertain terms, the United States Secretary of State is saying this is Iran. A point I want to mention is that I find this very curious, because this is not the only attack that it purports to be Iranian attack on Saudi Arabia, because it seems like Iran and Saudi Arabia are basically using Yemen as proxies for their skirmish for dominance in the Middle East. I mean, that's just what it is. But this is an escalation. There's never been this type of attack to date in the Iran-Saudi skirmish that's going on. I won't say skirmish, I'll say conflict. That's going on. And I find it very curious that there are reports that the main reason why John Bolton was ousted is because there was an indication that the administration wanted to soften its position on Iran. Isn't that interesting? It's interesting to me that shortly after John Bolton's departure, all of a sudden, Iran feels like it can pop off some firecrackers. That's interesting to note. I also will share with you that when is the next date for the United Nations General Assembly to go into conference again? Oh, yeah, that starts tomorrow. Isn't that timing interesting as well? Just before the next UN General Assembly, there's some firecrackers popping off from Iran. I find that interesting. But I raise this because I don't want to spend all of this time discussing the details of the attack and military strategy and what the U.S. will do in response. What I want to share with you is something that I don't think gets enough attention in the media, is that despite Iran's attack, which, as Mike Pompeo said, it's an attack on the world's energy supply, you know one nation that really won't be affected by this attack? The United States of America. Why is that? I'll share this with you. Though in the past, an attack like this on Saudi Arabia's largest processing plant would have inflicted unprecedented economic pain on America and the rest of the world, not just a temporary uptick in the price of oil, that won't happen this time around, you see. Under President Trump, America has unleashed access to our oil and natural gas reserves. It's extremely, extremely interesting because America has now become largely energy independent, which means that what we need to provide for our energy needs is largely being provided by our own natural resources. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. During the last week in August, the United States Energy Information Administration, the EIA, announced that American crude oil production has hit an all-time record of 12.5 million barrels per day. This is an astounding 40% increase in production since 2017. Now, listen, y'all know when President Trump does something good, I'll say it. When he does something bad, I'll say it. This is the product of good Trump policy. 40% increase in production since January of 2017, when the president began his administration. It's not only our producing capacity that has grown, meaning how many barrels of crude oil we produce per day, but our oil refineries are also processing record amounts of oil. Earlier this year, we hit 18.8 million barrels of oil being refined per day through our refineries. See, it's facts like this that really should shut down all of the anti-frackers, because normally when you have an attack like this, which is why Iran did it, which is why Iran, from what all the evidence we have so far, has done it because it's an easy way to cause all the world to stand at attention. But this time, because the U.S. is well prepared, it's not going to affect us at all. In fact, the U.S. has opened up our reserves to fill in the gaps as a result of our sanctions against Iran. So we are now providing more energy and more resources for other nations as well. The U.S. has now become the world's largest net exporter of liquid natural gas. This is worth discussing, folks. And I'm sharing this with you because I don't want us to get so bogged down in the details and he said, she said, and allowing the mainstream talking snake media to drive what the information that we receive, but so that we can be aware that, you know what, we can tolerate what happens on the international scale because we are finally unleashing our own potential as an energy producer. This is great news. Let me go further. As I said, in addition to achieving near energy independence, the U.S. is now dominating the global market and helping to relieve the pressure of Iran and Russia's petro-tyranny on other countries. When the president took office, there was essentially no concept of the U.S. exporting crude oil to the world. Now, our exporting capacity has increased threefold on crude oil, and we're now importing less oil than we ever have in the history of our country. This is happening right now. I mentioned about us being the number one net exporter of liquid natural gas in the world. The EIA predicts that the U.S. liquid natural gas exports will increase 72% this year over last year's impressive showing. And then getting to petroleum production combined with other liquid production, the total U.S. production is projected to hit 20.73 million barrels per day during the fourth quarter of 2019. That is a 67% and 83% more than Saudi Arabia and Russia, respectively. You hear what I'm saying? We are producing more than these other nations. Just 7 years ago, those nations were producing more than us. Now, why do I share that? I share that because, contrary to much of the popular discourse, now is not the time to ease up our pressure on Iran. Our sanctions have reduced Iran's export of crude oil, which was previously several million barrels per day. It's plummeted now to 200,000 barrels or less per day. You want to know why? Because these other nations, one, the U.S. has placed sanctions on Iran. So we said, if you want to do business with us on these other areas, you can't do business with Iran. And these other nations that are saying, okay, America, uncle, we'll yield to you. Well, can you help us on these oil and natural gas needs? And the U.S. steps in and says, well, yes, we can. So now, not only is Iran producing less oil in barrels per day, they also have a plummeting price because the market. You remember that old thing of economics, supply and demand? Well, the supply hasn't changed. We just don't have to get it from Iran. We don't have to get it from these other nations. And so this is not the time to ease up pressure on Iran. And this, in my opinion, is why Iran is popping off firecrackers. Because historically, it's the same type of ideology of Kim Jong-un. These rogue nations act up. The next thing you know, the international community and the U.S. says, oh, what do you need? We just need to understand you more. Maybe we need to give you more monies. Maybe we need to send an unmarked plane with billions of dollars in cash. Please, please. The sanctions that we're applying on Iran is working. According to the Wall Street Journal, I just shared this, Iranian oil exports have plummeted from 2.5 million barrels per day to 200,000 barrels per day. Meanwhile, our exports are at record levels high. It's nearly 16 times greater than that of Iran specifically, which is the exact converse of where these things stood under President Obama. Under President Obama, Iran produced 16 times more than us. But that has reversed in such short time. So I just wanted to share that with you because I thought that was important for us to know that, hey, this is not one of those things that's on the front page every single day, but in terms of natural gas and in terms of crude oil and energy production, the U.S. is shaking things up on the global markets, which we need to continue. It's one of the best ways we can continue to remain a global superpower if we cut off the hegemony of these rogue nations and use what God has blessed us with on this land, in this land. I just thought that was important to share. Now, I have more foolishness to get to. Maybe I'll start this. And I didn't start with this because I don't like to be manipulated by the talking snakes. But most of you have heard the latest allegations against Brett Kavanaugh, which I'm not going to even bother you with going into the details because it's utterly ridiculous. I mean, now you have a guy named Max Steyer, who it's now proven to be this dude is a Clinton crony. He's a Clinton crony who's saying that, oh, yeah, I was there at a frat party when you know, Brett Kavanaugh, he was drunk, you know, and he was, you know, he had been pantsed and oops, he got pushed into another young lady and he, you know, she touched him in an inappropriate spot. The lady is not even saying this. She said, I don't remember none of this. There's a guy saying what a lady saying that he saw happen to another lady. Man, it's foolishness in my estimation. Because I told you last week, it turns out that Christine Blasey Ford, you know, the woman who was primarily at the core of the Kavanaugh hearings, where she claimed that Kavanaugh had raped her. I told you guys last week, her own father didn't even believe her. I mean, man, how low do you have to go? And the New York Times is the outfit that dropped this bombshell of another accusation of Brett Kavanaugh. And their initial story, they left out the fact that, oh, yeah, the woman who you said this happened to, she don't remember that. They left that out. I'm dead serious. I wish I could see Jason laughing. I'm dead serious. The New York Times failed to include that little fact. Don't you think that's important? That the woman that this guy is saying it happened to, she was like, I don't know about that. So then the New York Times have to issue a correction. Yeah, right. I'm going to tell you, and you're going to have to hang over to the other side of the break, I think that was done intentionally to try to fill the 24-hour news cycle with stuff concerning Brett Kavanaugh because there's another piece of information they don't want out. But I guess you just have to tune in to hear that. Stay tuned, I should say, to hear that. Because not only did Christine Blasey Ford's father not believe her, now the woman who she said was in the room with her, the only other woman, Leland Kaiser, you had two so-called journalists from the New York Times who wrote a book, and they stuck in the very end of their book that Christine Blasey Ford's friend, Leland Kaiser, didn't even believe Christine Blasey Ford. Now you suckers had this information all of this time, and now you're just letting the public know? I mean, you took the time to put it in the book, you know, go through the editing process, put it together in the package, take your photos, geez, for your covers, and all of that, and now you're going to share that information? Man, this is ridiculous. And then not only that, Leland Kaiser has a son. And did you know Leland Kaiser used to be married to Bob Beckel? Did you know that? Bob Beckel, the former Fox News and now CNN news pundit, used to be married to Bob Beckel. Well, their son, Alex Beckel, said Christine Ford's camp pressured their mom into trying to help her with this charade.
Brian will tell us what he's interested in, and Brian's interested in about everything. There's not a story out there that he does not see through a biblical lens. It's not finding content for the program. It's finding which content would be best for that day.
Focal Point with Brian Fisher, weekdays at 1 Central on AFR.
Brian walks into the studio with a stack of papers ready to tackle the issues of the day.
Target is in the bullseye because of its transgender bathroom policy.
A petition by the American Family Association to boycott Target now surpassing 1 million signatures and counting.
People have their own beliefs and stuff, but what could it hurt? What could it hurt? What could it hurt?
It hurts our daughters.
It hurts you. It hurts our families.
It hurts me.
It hurts all of us.
Sign the petition to boycott Target at afa.net.
Privilege. This is David Wheaton, host of the Christian Worldview. You have probably noticed the term privilege being used. For example, one may be labeled as having white privilege and therefore is not qualified to speak about racism, or that one must give up their quote power by working to elevate others of ethnic minority. This is another tentacle of the unbiblical worldview of social justice, which divides people into identity groups and fans the flames of grievance to transform society. The Bible commands that we treat everyone with impartiality, no matter what they look like or what they have. The Apostle Peter said, "I most certainly understand now that God is not one to show partiality." Hear more at thechristianworldview.org. And then tune in this weekend for another topic that will sharpen your worldview.
Listen to The Christian Worldview with David Wheaton, Saturday mornings at 8 Central on American Family Radio.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. A major school district wants to ban chocolate milk. That story next. The New York City Department of Education wants to ban chocolate milk, and local dairy farmers are fighting mad. The New York Post reports school leaders are pushing a white milk-only policy, citing health concerns. They say chocolate milk contains too much sugar, and that's a no-no. School districts in San Francisco and Washington, D.C. have already banned flavored milk. So did Los Angeles, but that decision was so unpopular, they reversed the ban. There is bipartisan opposition in New York. Congressman Anthony Brindisi, a Democrat from Utica, says banning chocolate milk would hurt dairy farmers. The broader issue is New York City's belief that they should decide what children should or should not eat or drink, a decision that should be left to moms and dads instead of government-run food police. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio. We will open the phone lines this segment, so if you'd like to join the program, you're welcome to do so by calling 888-589-8840. The number to call again is 888-589-8840. Before we went to the break, I was just giving you a rundown of the people who have come out saying that Christine Blasey Ford was lying. Her own father didn't believe her. Leland Kaiser. Not only did she not support Christine Blasey Ford during the Kavanaugh confirmation process, now we have evidence in that you have New York Times authors and journalists knew that Leland Kaiser said this didn't happen. She wasn't there. This didn't happen. And now, Leland Kaiser's son, who is, I didn't know this, but Leland Kaiser used to be married to Bob Beckel. Their son, Alex Beckel, said that Christine Ford's camp and even some in Congress threatened them to basically lie during the Kavanaugh confirmation hearing. And so I just, man, and this is, folks, and I know I'm beating a dead horse with this, but this is why I call a Talking Snake Media the Talking Snake Media. Because in order to put this stuff in the book, you have had to have this at a minimum months ago, if not a year or so ago. And I'll tell you, and they probably don't want me to tell you this part, but you know, these reporters for the New York Times, they called me to ask me about the American Family Association's internal discussions concerning the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation process. And I can tell you that call happened over a year ago. Now, if they interview Leland Kaiser about the same time they interviewed me, and by the way, of course, my comments didn't end up in the book. Y'all know that, right? They don't want your boy in the book because now your boy ain't saying what they want to hear. They called me. So if they interviewed Kaiser about the time they interviewed me in my capacity as a spokesperson for the American Family Association, then I can tell you it would have been far more newsworthy that the very person who Christine Blasey Ford was saying, yeah, she was in a room with me, if they would have shared that this woman is saying, no, I wasn't, back when they called me, I think the New York Times might not have been able to print some of the other stuff. But hey, I don't know that to be a fact. So let me just say, I don't know if the interviews happened at about the same time. But I sure was contacted for a person writing a book about the Kavanaugh confirmation process. Do with that what you will. Moving along. Now, I'm going to tell you why I think this latest Kavanaugh smear attempt has transpired publicly. Did you guys know that Friday in the evening or afternoon hours, depending on which time zone you're in, there was a little bit of information that came out from the Department of Justice Inspector General named Michael Horowitz? Did you know that on Friday, Michael Horowitz contacted Congress and informed them that the Inspector General had completed his probe into the FISA abuse scandal? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Did you know that? Listen to a little bit of audio where the acting Attorney General at the time, Matthew Whitaker, was speaking about the pending Inspector General FISA report. Please play clip number one.
We're finally going to see how this investigation started, how a FISA was obtained from for Carter Page, and how the dossier was used in that investigation. And from where I sit and from what I know, I think it is going to be fairly dramatic what this investigation is going to show. Because as you know, it now appears that actually the Russian collusion was with Michael Steele and the Democrats, who paid for this original dossier that was used as the foundation for this investigation. And I think this is such a critical moment on behalf of the American people and the Department of Justice to show everything that went into this so that we can know that and make sure this never happens again.
So that investigation that Matthew Whitaker, who's no longer there, now William Barr's Attorney General, where we would be able to get to the bottom of the genesis of this whole Russian collusion delusion and this entire FISA scandal, I would call it, based on the Michael Steele dossier. Michael Horowitz contacts Congress on Friday and says, hey, y'all, by the way, I'm finished with that. I'm about to run this report your way. And then, coincidentally, not so coincidentally, the New York Times publishes a smear story that doesn't even have all the facts about Brett Kavanaugh. Surely you have to know that the world over will want to talk about Kavanaugh. When is the last time you saw a report about the FISA scandal? About the genesis of, the spying on Carter Page and President Trump having his wires tapped and James Comey signing off on it. And the former deputy attorney, Rod Rosenstein, signing off on it. And can't forget Sally Yates signing off on it. And all of these people putting their hands in the cookie jars just after the same Inspector General referred Andrew McCabe, the former deputy director of the FBI, and the former acting director of the FBI for criminal charges. It kind of feels like some folks didn't want an entire weekend of information percolating about this FISA probe. Coinkydink? I think not. I think because did we not litigate the entire Kavanaugh confirmation saga? Did we not go through all of that? And you come up with a news story from a woman who doesn't remember, who says, and then when you hear the facts, and I'm not going to go into the facts partly because I know there are children listening to the show, listening to the show, and I know you can find the facts. The facts are completely ludicrous. I mean, for the New York Times to print that is absurd. It's absurd. But they printed it. And they forgot to print the part that the very woman who they're claiming was so-called victimized, she said, well, I don't know about that. Don't you think that would be an important part? If I'm going to tell you a story, hey, guys, you know, I want to report to you that I saw Jeff Reed suffer a mugging in the parking lot. Don't you think it would be important if I'm printing that story and reporting that story and Jeff Reed conveys to me, hey, Abe, I don't really know if that happened or not. Don't you think it would be important for me to include that in my story if I'm going to make it a story? Or if I'm just in it to throw some stuff out there to let it feel the media. It's almost like, no, don't look at the Pfizer probe. No, you don't want to see that. Don't look at that. No, that didn't happen. Talking snakes, man. Talking snakes. this cover, in my opinion, of the Pfizer abuse scandal. And let me say something. This is a perfect example of how the talking snake media does these things. Even I just now repeated in my conversations about covering the Ford story, the allegations were an assault of a sexual nature. It really was physical contact. But you have certain notions and stories that are repeated into your brain because that's the way it was being reported. That, he raped Brett Kavanaugh when the actual allegations weren't rape. They weren't rape. But it was an assault of some form. And so that's why they do these things to try to cover all of these things up. Anyway, I promise I get to the phone lines. If you'd like to join the conversation, you're welcome to do so. If you want to talk about Acts chapter 16, verses 1 through 10, an example of the Apostle Paul relying on his ministerial team to enable him to discern the will of God appropriately as to when and where they were to minister, you're welcome to do that. If you would like to discuss Saudi Arabia and its oil field being attacked by what seems to be, at this point, Iran, you're welcome to do that. If you'd like to discuss America's oil and energy supplies being able to withstand this brouhaha in Saudi Arabia, welcome to do that. Or if you want to discuss what I believe is a cover-up effort to try to fill the 24-hour media news cycle, because they know many in America have recency bias. And so if you can fill the media with conversations about Kavanaugh, you're able to press or to push to the bottom of your news reporting or to ignore in totality the report that Michael Horowitz has completed his FISA probe and he's conveyed that to Congress. With that, we will start in Alabama, where Brenda is on the line. Brenda, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I love your show. I just want to give you some highlights of what I've already seen about this Ford case and the Russian probe on Fox. The Ford lady was videoed with her lawyer. You can look it up and find it, where the lawyer told her, we have got to make this stick. We have cannot let Kavanaugh get in there because he's going to stop the abortions. That was on Fox Channel.
Yeah, I shared that last week. I played audio of Ford's lawyer saying that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So it was totally a lie, the whole shebang. And now this thing that they're telling today was in another book that somebody wrote, and it said in there that their person that so-called said this will not confirm it, and there's no proof and all that. And then they didn't write that part. They just wrote the upper part of the story, and they said they put it in the paper hoping that someone would see it and get it out into the news and on the Internet to block, like you said, the information about the Russians, you know, the FISA thing coming out.
Yep.
And so they got it, and the Democrat politicians all got it and ran with it, and now it's out there for everybody to hear. And Trump came on there with his tweet and told Kavanaugh that he needs to sue these people for doing this stuff to him.
I
and
saw
don't
that.
Let them get away with it.
I saw that. Brenda, thank you for your call and your comments. You're absolutely right. And the things that you reported, the one thing is that you referred to, the New York Times is the one who printed this story, and they left out the part to where the woman who they identified doesn't even mention that I said this, and she will not publicly state anything, which is clearly an effort, in my opinion, to obfuscate the news cycle, to prohibit a more thorough deep dive by, I would say, the journalists into what exactly is in the IG's report on the FISA abuse. You know, it's just sad. And, you know, this is one of the things that's happening in our society. You have people that are able to publicly malign the character and reputation of an individual without any recourse. So there's no fear with doing it again. You know, there were no consequences for any of the things that transpired previously. So people feel like they can come out and say anything without fear of any consequences. And so we have this happening. Let's go next to Arkansas, where Mike is on the line. And again, if you'd like to join the program, the number is 888-589-8840. Mike, thank you for calling the Hamilton Corner. Welcome to the program.
Brother Abraham.
Yes, sir.
God bless you, brother. It's so good to talk to you. Appreciate you standing out on the front line and taking all the slings and arrows and love the ministry God's given you. I just wanted to call and make sure that I think most people that watched all the Kavanaugh stuff don't even really understand what he was actually accused of, which was grabbing her, rubbing up against her, and then falling on the bed. And this supposedly happened when they were teenagers, and this is brought against a 50-year-old man or 50-plus, whatever, whenever he's nominated for the Supreme Court. And I'm not saying that's all right if he did something like that, but that's the extent of supposedly what destroyed her life and should have destroyed his too.
Mike, thank you for your call and your comments. You know, and I've said repeatedly, the first thing that caused this not to pass the smell test for me is that if you're making an allegation of a criminal event, that the state of Maryland, the particular province where this purportedly occurred, has no statute of limitations. If there was something like this that happened, why would you? Yeah, and I'll even give you, let's say you revealed it to Congress members first. Why not report it to the police? If, you know, if you're going to come out with it publicly, why not involve the police? You know, that didn't pass the smell test. Well, I have one last bit of foolishness I've been holding on before, and then some of you may know who this is, some of you may not know. But Terrence Howard, who's an actor in numerous movies, most recently, he was in that disaster of a debauchery show called Empire. Following the revelation that Empire has been canceled by Fox, you know, because the show has been canned. They're not picking up any new seasons of it. Terrence Howard has decided he wants to quit acting. In fact, Terrence Howard said, I'm done with acting. I'm done pretending. He didn't want to pretend anymore, which I've said repeatedly. I don't know why our society is so enthralled with people who pretend for a living. That's what they do. They play make-believe. Patty cake, imaginary friends, the whole nine yards for a living. But our society has him on as high a pedestal. So what's Terrence Howard going to do now? He says he's going to focus on bringing truth to the world. Not philanthropy. Oh, no, he said, I won't be doing any philanthropy. But now I'm going to bring truth to the world. I guess it really is hard out here for Terrence Howard. Because Jussie Smollett, hey, man, this DJ, man, he messed with my mode, man. I got to get my mode. Hey, Nola, cut them fans. Terrence Howard's quitting the business, y'all. He's done pretending. Y'all have a great day.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.